round. It's also a big day here at Times Radio.
It is.
Because Rosie Wright has a new job.
I'm going to be doing Weekend Breakfast with Callum McDonald.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Kate's giving me a cup.
Well, our producer Emma's brought them in.
We're going to miss you, Rosie. Though,
going to miss you.
We've got a few more weeks of me still.
We get to hang out at 4 in the morning, don't we?
I know.
Who doesn't want that?
But we'll hang out from 6 on weekends with Rosie, Friday and Saturday and Sunday.
Breakfast next.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Good morning, it's 6 o'clock. This is Stig Abel and Kate McCann with Times Radio Breakfast.
Headlines this morning, Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor. God, it's annoying you have to give his full name, isn't it? You know, Andrew has finally moved out of his home in Windsor after the latest revelations in the Epstein files, and the Health Secretary Wes Streeting announced a national cancer plan which he says will save more than 300,000 lives by 2035.
Ahead, we'll look at how America's billionaires have been caught up in the latest Epstein releases, and we'll hear about the country where you can be executed for watching the wrong television programme.
It's Wednesday, the 4th of February.
This is Times Radio.
First, let's get the news with Cara Bentley.
Thanks, Kate. Good morning. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved out of Royal Lodge after coming under pressure from the King. He has relocated from the Windsor mansion to an undisclosed address on the King's Sandringham estate in Norfolk. It comes as Thames Valley Police confirmed they're assessing allegations that a woman separate from Virginia Giuffre was sent to the UK for a sexual encounter with the former prince. He has always denied any wrongdoing. Yesterday, Andrew's younger brother, Prince Edward, said people should always remember the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's wider abusive operation. Jess Michaels says she was abused by Epstein when she was 22.
What we're seeing with the files is that there are extreme redactions and then extreme neglect to redact. I mean, a five-year-old could have done a better job.
Meanwhile, the Conservatives are going to try to force the government to release all information relating to Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the United States at the end of 2024. Kemi Badenoch demanded Downing Street explain the vetting process as she claimed concerns were waved away. Patrick Maguire is chief political commentator for The Times and says this could destabilise Sir Keir Starmer's leadership.
If the Tories can pass this vote, and it would require a big, big number of Labour rebels, but it's not impossible in the current context that that happens, what happens if they secure the release of the advice and the vetting and all the records of the appointment and find that not very much was done? What does that mean for the Prime Minister?
Police are investigating allegations that the former cabinet minister leaked market-sensitive information to the paedophile financier Epstein while serving in Gordon Brown's government. The government's aiming to transform cancer survival rates in England, saying 75% of those diagnosed from 2035 will be cancer-free after 5 years. The rate is currently 60%. But around 424,000 people are diagnosed each year in the whole of the UK, an increase of more than 70,000 people since 2012. Denmark introduced a national cancer plan 25 years ago. Jasper Fisker is from the Danish Cancer Society and has this advice for the UK.
I think the long-term commitment, also the long-term investment, is essential if you want to succeed in Britain. And you have to have this as, you know, a long-term goal. This is not going to happen over 5, 6, 7 years. So you have to have this long-term perspective.
A fresh batch of Nestlé baby formula has been added to a product recall after it was found to contain a toxin that causes vomiting and diarrhoea. Some products were already removed from shelves last month. Now, customers in Northern Ireland are told not to buy certain 800-gram packs of SMA Advanced First Formula Milk. Nestlé says it's acting out of an abundance of caution. And if you're a fan of Rosie Wright on Early Breakfast from the 20th of March, you can hear her on Times Radio Breakfast on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays. She'll join the 6 a.m. slot with Callum McDonald over the weekends. For a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio news briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online and on your smart speaker. Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide.
Good morning. This is Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel. It's easy to reach for big historical claims, and we're all guilty of recency bias. But here's a notion for you to consider this morning. The Mandelson affair is now the biggest political scandal of our generation. Worse than expenses, worse than Partygate. Indeed, too serious even to be given the gate suffix at all. Do you agree with that? Peter Mandelson is now to be investigated by police and will be questioned under caution for sharing market-sensitive information with his paedophile financier friend Epstein. Gordon Brown, whom Epstein called smelly in what looks like an inside joke, has already given information to the Met over what he's called an inexcusable and unpatriotic act. Keir Starmer, desperate to avoid questions about his own judgment in keeping so close to Mandelson, has termed the behaviour disgraceful, saying that his former ambassador had let the country down. We learned today that Mandelson's boyfriend was paid $4,000 a month by Epstein on a standing order set up while Mandelson was in government. And the Prime Minister has said he was not reassured that the totality of the information had yet emerged. There's more to come, in other words, and I'm sure that's true. In fact, Dan Needle, who's been digging up information all week, will be giving us some more new revelations at 8:30 this morning.
There are plenty of other stories around today as well. We'll be looking at the judicial system. Lord Leveson has completed the second part of his review into the crisis in the criminal courts. He'll tell us his further ideas, including letting prison vans use bus lanes to get to court on time. We'll hear news of plans to introduce American-style supermax prisons in this country, which sounds highly tough and rigorous, although we'll also report the findings of the National Audit Office that the prisons we've currently got have an unrepaired security system that let drugs in very freely. And we'll also talk about migration, as we often do, but from a new angle today. What'll happen to our economy if the net figure zero, if the net figure hits zero? One think tank has calculated the cost at an eye-watering £37 billion.
Later on, we'll talk to Andrew Neil and Danny Finkelstein about where the Mandelson scandal leaves British politics. We're going to have two rugby legends in the studio, Martin Johnson and Jason Robinson. Martin Johnson was literally my hero growing up watching Leicester Tigers, so that will be nice. Though he's here to talk about male friendship, which I don't understand. So that might be awkward. Plus, we're going to look at the triumph of fast food over proper restaurants because of a squeeze on household finances. And speaking of something cheap and unhealthy that leaves you feeling strangely unsatisfied after half an hour, it's Giles Corran and Edwina Curry here to talk over the news at 9 o'clock.
You are so mean. We're also going to talk to them about whether you should bring children into restaurants, because there's a story in the papers today about a woman who was very cross. She went to quite a fancy restaurant, it has to be said, and she was cross about a three-year-old who was allowed to run round and shout.
There's two parts to this story. One is, when you see a kids in a restaurant and they're on screens, do you judge the family? I think people do.
No, I don't.
I don't, and you shouldn't do, because who knows what's going on in a person's family, but I think people do.
Yeah, they probably do.
And then it's kids running around. See, to me, running around is far worse than having on screens.
It's worse than screens.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you would go screens rather than the running around.
But what we do, and we've always done, is we take stuff. I mean, if you take a book, which we've done, or a sticker book, or a drawing pad,
yeah,
it's the same principle as a screen, isn't it? You're basically saying, we're not willing to sit for 2 hours and talk.
Though.
Yeah, it is, but we're still saying we're not in a position to talk as a family for 2 hours formally in a restaurant.
No, that's a good point.
Which, when I was a kid, I think restaurants were so rare and exciting that you almost were, you're on your best behaviour.
Well, you were told you're on your best behaviour. But then is that gentle parenting?
Well, we do that now, yeah.
You do gentle parenting.
Children led, you know, we've lost the ability. My kids don't respect me at all. Okay. I don't blame them.
You can share your thoughts this morning. I'm sure that they do. You can WhatsApp us on 0333 0003 2353, text us on 87222, start your message with the word Times, or you can email our producer Emma on studio@times.radio.
8 minutes past six. Of course, the revelations about Peter Mandelson have dominated in the UK, but many famous Americans have been caught up by the release of the Epstein files. President Trump is mentioned thousands of times, but he says he's been absolved by the latest release. Famous billionaires Elon Musk and Bill Gates are also in there. Bill Clinton is in there. But what is precisely sticking when it comes to the claims over in America? Trevor Honeycutt is a Reuters White House correspondent. I asked him whether it's fair to say, as Donald Trump is saying, that he's been absolved by this release of the Epstein files.
First of all, just in terms of the substance of any allegations, there's nothing really in these files that's conclusive one way or the other in terms of suggesting or proving some nefarious link between Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. Those answers aren't included even in 3 million pages of information. As far as politically, the question is politically, what does this do for Donald Trump? That's also up in the air too. So there's two ways to think about this. One is, does this change the likelihood that Republicans will be able to win in November and continue pressing forward with Donald Trump's agenda, or will they be hurt by this? When we talk to Republicans, when we talk to White House officials, they tell us that they don't think voters are voting on these issues. And when you look at the polls, voters are not voting on these issues. They're voting on kitchen table issues. But there is a political problem here, which is that Donald Trump is being taken off his message, right? And anytime he has a press availability right now, he's getting asked questions about Jeffrey Epstein. And that's not, allowing him to convince voters who are skeptical right now that his economic agenda is aligned with their interests.
But I guess the point is that for all of these 3 million documents, and the fact that Trump clearly had a relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, which ended, there's no moment where Epstein says something that would implicate or confirm that Trump did something with women that Epstein had provided. Have we got to that point? That there's no smoking gun, is there?
No, and I mean, and anything that's coming from Jeffrey Epstein personally, right? We have a lot of emails from him in these document dumps. Anything from him personally would also be treated, you know, as potentially, misinformation as well, right? And so, no, we don't have anything from Epstein himself that suggests anything nefarious. And the information that we do have that names Donald Trump in these files is completely unsubstantiated and uncorroborated, right? And so it does not help us get to factual answers about what happened.
Is that what's the worst thing that's hovering over Trump out of this? Is there a claim unsubstantiated, as you say, and we'll make that very clear? But is that what's the worst thing that's emerged about Trump from this dump?
Well, I mean, his name is the fact that his name is mentioned, right? His name is mentioned many times in these documents that were dumped. There are claims about him, about his association with Epstein that are not great, but again, completely unsubstantiated. And as you can see, you know, the Congress is looking at the Clintons and having them testify. So there are a lot of famous people clearly tied up in these files. We've got aides of Donald Trump, Howard Lutnick, who said his relationship with Epstein had ended, documents suggesting that wasn't exactly the case. So, yeah, so a lot there.
Is there more to come? Has anything been held back? Has anything been redacted that you're aware of?
There are some redactions. There are obviously in some of the victims' cases, they would have preferred more redactions. But the Department of Justice has suggested that they are at the end in terms of what they are going to be releasing as a result of this.
Is there any chance Trump could be called to testify on this, or as a president, can he sort of not have to appear before Congress like this?
No, we shouldn't expect that, especially from Republican-controlled Congress this year. You know, what I think we can expect politically is that if Democrats do take over the House after November's elections, they in all likelihood will continue investigations related to Trump writ large and potentially related to this issue if they take over Congress next year.
Meanwhile, Elon Musk has appeared in all of this. He said he had nothing to do with Epstein. And again, the central story out of this appears to be very powerful people have pretended to the world that once Epstein was first convicted, they had nothing to do with him. And what seems to be the case is that's not true. And that's not true for Peter Mandelson here. It seems to be true for a whole tranche of powerful people.
It's clear that, you know, what these emails, especially the emails between Epstein and other people, do show is that that Epstein did not become a complete pariah after he got entangled with the law enforcement system, and in fact retained a lot of really you know, high value relationships clearly through that period as well. And that has been very embarrassing for those people.
Just before you go, Trevor, I think our prime minister spoke to Trump last night. I don't think they spoke about Epstein. I'm sure it would have been a very awkward topic, but they probably spoke about Chagos. It's a big story over here, the Chagos Islands. And the question is whether Trump will let Britain continue with their plan to do the deal they've done with Mauritius. Are you getting any murmurings? Because if Trump says no, it kills the deal. Are you hearing anything about that over there? Does it?
Well, no. So we did have this statement, the Downing Street statement, that suggested that they had a reasonably positive conversation about this topic. The White House, interestingly, has not substantiated that one way or the other. They have not characterized the tone and tenor of that conversation. So it remains to be seen if the U.S. if Trump's perspective on that call matches with Prime Minister Starmer.
Yeah. What happens to the Chagos deal is still a very live issue. That's Trevor Hunnicutt there, Reuters White House correspondent. Nicholas has made a point, which I think is a fair one. There seems the real reason there's been the resistance to releasing all the emails is not what they might tell us about an underage sex ring, and more what they might tell us about the twilight world of power and influence and information trading between already powerful men. And I think that's an excellent... I think there are two scandals here. Mm. And you shouldn't underestimate the first one, which is the scandal of underage women or trafficked women who were clearly abused by this. That's the thing that that Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty of being involved in. That's the thing that Epstein was clearly guilty of. But there is the scandal we're talking about in this country with Mandelson and the broader one, which is how does power actually function in the world and in this country? And it's clearly, if you're rich, you get your tentacles into the system of government. And part of the system of government is willing to respond to that.
Well, it's power, isn't it? I mean, it's not even just about wealth, it's about power, because lots of very wealthy people who, you know, work in the music industry and things like that don't have that reach into government. It's about power and influence. And if you're somebody working in business or finance or, you know, even other sectors that have some kind of, you know, reach into what government is doing, the government will want to speak to you.
Yeah.
I mean, ministers will naturally want to speak to you. It's about whether there are clear guidelines and boundaries for those relationships. And for me, one of the things that I really want to speak to, Wes Streeting's on our programme today for the government, the health secretary, just after seven, is about whether we need to rethink the way government captures information. Because, okay, we know that Mandelson has forwarded emails on because we've seen the emails released in these Epstein files. But what about all the WhatsApps that go between the ministers all the time?
And we only know these emails because of the Epstein files.
Yeah. And otherwise we would never have known.
If you believe Gordon Brown asked for a proper investigation, they couldn't find any emails.
Because they were private.
Because they were private emails. Where do you stand on this question of how big a scandal? So I was, you know, scandal of a generation. It doesn't matter entirely, but I think it's interesting that I was around for the expenses. Mm-hmm. That was a huge moment where it felt like the ruling classes were at it and in a way that wasn't that acceptable. But I think this is worse. I do think this is worse because I think in the end, if you look at the characters involved, a financial crisis, the timings, financial crisis, a government on the brink, a convicted paedophile, a man like Mandelson who sort of ghosted around the corridors of power, sharing or appearing to share information, taking money from him or appearing to take money from him, his partner taking money from him. To me, this is at a time when the country was very nearly toppling, in a crisis from which we've still not recovered. This feels like this could be the biggest one that I can think of in my lifetime.
I think it is significant, and we will not be able to fully comprehend the significance of it for some time, I think, because we are still in the middle of it. And that's what happened with the expenses scandal too. I think expenses undermined something about the trust that people in this country had for government. And it led us into a lot of other places that have set the tone, I think, for our politics today. I think expenses damaged something quite important in the national psyche.
Yeah.
I think this scandal is different in the sense that people often expect that this kind of behaviour happens, or that they think it happens, but maybe we don't always know about it. So in a way, it's confirmation of something that people already thought was going on behind the scenes. But I think what this is going to do to the way that government runs is going to be really significant. I think it has to be. And I wonder whether Keir Starmer now is going to grasp that. Because he hasn't done, I think it's fair to say, he has not grasped that before now. He was, you know, still defending ultimately Peter Mandelson and his appointment of Peter Mandelson, who was not properly vetted before he was appointed, which is a significant, that special treatment. And so that was already happening in this government.
I
wonder if the Prime Minister can today recognise that and take some steps to making sure that something like this is not able to happen again.
It's a really interesting point. And we'll hear from him from PMQs. We've got Wes Streeting, as Kate says, at 7 o'clock. We'll see what he says about it. He's quite close to Mandelson. They're seen as allies. That they've supported each other over the years. 0000032353. Where does this rank? How significant is this in your mind when it comes to the political scandals of the past?
It is 19 minutes past six. Let's take a look at what else is happening online and in the papers this morning. On the front page of the Times, we mentioned him just there, the Health Secretary has announced a national cancer plan under which 75% of patients are expected to survive the disease. Wes Streeting has said that long waiting times can mean cancer is more likely to be a death sentence in Britain than in other countries. We're already lagging behind Romania and Poland in survival rates for some cancers, for example. We'll speak to Wes Streeting later this morning. We'll ask him about those plans and why it's taking so long for us to catch up.
The son of the Libyan dictator, Colonel Gaddafi, is reported to have been killed. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi is thought to have been shot dead in a raid by armed men on his home in northwestern Libya. He was once thought to be a possible more moderate ruler of Libya. He had a PhD from the London School of Economics and was hosted by the royal family at Windsor Castle. Although if we learned anything in the last couple of weeks, being hosted by the royal family at Windsor Castle is no guide whatsoever to quality of character. He was captured during the revolt that ended his father's rule in 2011 and imprisoned for 6 years and was charged with crimes against humanity by the International Criminal Court.
Also in the Times, the ex-husband of the former First Lady Jill Biden has been charged with the murder of his wife. William Stevenson, who was divorced from Jill Biden in 1975, was indicted by a Delaware grand jury over the death of Linda Stevenson. Police responded to a domestic dispute at their home on the 28th of December and found her unresponsive.
This is in the Times. Which alternative indie rock anthem from a band of left-wingers, this is a really good song, I think, has become the song of choice for Spain's far-right political party? I get knocked down, but I get up again. If that doesn't wake you up in the morning, I don't know what is.
Welcome to Wednesday. It's such a good tune.
Tub thumping. It's been used in an anti-immigration campaign video by the Spanish far-right populist Vox Party. The song was very famously performed by Chumbawamba. Famous for supporting all kinds of left-wing causes, their lead singer, if you remember this, you're a certain age, once poured water over Labour Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott's head for his failure to support a dock workers' strike. The band have asked Facebook to remove the video and have said they were sickened that the song of hope and community, is it that?
Yeah.
Had been used to promote, it's just a song about drinking, isn't it?
No, it's not.
They drink
it's
a whiskey drink, hope. They drink a lager drink.
Drink a
vodka drink.
I drink a cider drink.
Yeah, anyway. Had been used to promote Vox's small-minded, hate-fueled propaganda. You could write a book, couldn't you, of all the songs written by left-wing artists that right-wing politicians have used without their consent.
Deliberately.
Yeah.
Also in the Times this morning, scientists are looking at the logistics of, and I have to say this, a story that we raised on this programme. We are ahead of the times, literally, because we talked about it about a month ago. Of being able to couple, it says here, but let's say what it is, have sex in space. One engineer has proposed a solution is an unchastity belt, a kind of elastic harness designed to help lovers defy zero gravity, which creates obvious logistical obstacles for intimacy. A senior NASA scientist has said the real problem, though, is whether spaceflight affects human fertility, pregnancy and early fetal development.
Typical scientists just focusing on the boring, does it affect fertility?
We just want to know about the elastic belt.
We want to know about the unchastity belt. And the headline in the Times, page three of the Times, of course, astronautiness raises questions about making Earth move in space. And as we've investigated multiple times on this programme, we don't know how often people have tried it because they're too coy about it.
Well, I read an article after we talked about it, which was a credible reporting that suggests that people have done it. And NASA knows people have done it, but they're too squeamish to talk about it publicly.
People are suggesting what it can only be described as fascinating equipment for recreational intimate activities that might function in space. I'm sure they do.
We're not going to Google that, though, yeah, Mike.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Do astronauts do anything when they're on their own is another question that probably we shouldn't ask. 0333 003 235.
Doesn't need asking.
It occurred to me, but maybe that's just me. Stay with us this morning. Lots to talk about. There's an awful lot of stories around political and broader than that. Here's one from North Korea, actually. North Koreans are facing execution for watching South Korean TV shows. We'll speak to Amnesty International in Seoul next. This is Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stu Gable in association with Nationwide. A good way to bank.
The State of It, USA is the new podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times that brings you real truth about US politics and power. Join political heavyweights Katie Balls and Gerard Baker as they take a deep dive into the latest wrangles in the White House and bring you intelligent analysis and insight.
I went out on the road this week with the First Lady and we rode back in the motorcade.
No fake news, no flag waving and no Trump derangement syndrome. Just the inside track on the decisions that are shaping America. The State of It USA is available now on the Times Radio app or from your preferred podcast provider.
My dad is more than just a dad. My dad provides life-changing support to those affected by disaster and conflict, helping people in crisis, whoever and wherever they are. Through the gift that he left in his will to the British Red Cross, my dad still makes a difference to the world, even though he's no longer with us. You can make a difference too. Please go online and search Red Cross Wills and consider leaving a gift in your will to the British Red Cross.
Summer is calling. Book early for your trip to Turkey and get the most out of your holiday. Visit goturkey.com now and discover unforgettable experiences. Plan your summer getaway to Turkey today.
The Story. The award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Owned by members, not by shareholders.
Good morning. It's 6:26. North Korea has long been a brutal, repressive society that fails everyone but a handful of its leaders. Now, people who escape have told human rights campaigners that there have been executions for the crime of watching South Korean television. Sarah Brooks is the regional director of Amnesty International for East Asia and joins us live now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Explain these reports to us. They sound absolutely awful. What is going on?
As part of our research and speaking to escapees, we wanted to understand more about the situation in the country. It is so hard to obtain information about what is going on precisely because of the limitations that the North Korean authorities place on any form of exchange or access to information between those in North Korea and those living outside. That's precisely why they have targeted the consumption of foreign media, and in particular, cultural production, dramas, music from South Korea.
And so, how are people accessing South Korean television? How are they able to do that? And how is the government in North Korea then tracking and ultimately executing them? How is that working?
There's been a long practice of smuggling information across borders. Often on USB sticks. Increasingly, people who are able to access via clandestine use of devices, often via China. You really can't stop people's thirst for wanting to understand what is happening outside of their lives. And the isolation is so extreme that people will go to extremes and will take risks, even for the simple pleasure of watching a soap opera. So that's really how the information comes in. And the government's interest then in controlling access to that information and in punishing those who consume it is really about sending a message that such information is not quote-unquote pure, that it runs counter to a core ideology of the party, and that it is unacceptable or I might even use the word treasonous,
but how is,
for people to appreciate it.
But how is the government in North Korea finding out that people are doing this? Is it now so widespread that it's obvious that people are watching these programs on these USB sticks, or is it that other citizens are being encouraged to essentially tell the authorities about it? How are they being tracked?
One of the interviews we spoke to had a really powerful statement. He said, everyone knows that everyone is watching. And I believe that's true. The most important, I think, new finding that we discovered was that even if everybody is watching, only some people are paying the price. Mm. Those who are too poor, who don't have political connections to get out of the punishments that the North Korean authorities mete out for consuming this product.
Yeah, and it says something, doesn't it, about maybe the North Korean regime's fear of losing grip on people and the fact that, as you say, there so many people are now doing this. It's a really interesting study, Sarah. Thank you so much for giving us your time on the programme this morning.
Thank you.
That is Sarah Brooks, the Regional Director of Amnesty International for East Asia.
Loads of getting into this question of how should we judge this scandal around politics and Mandelson. Peter says, the difference between Mandelson and the expensive scandal is one of scale. The latter exposed nearly every MP for manipulating the system to use taxpayers' money for their own benefit. The authority of the whole political class was eroded as a result, which I think is a fair point. I do think the thing that Mandelson is accused of, and for which there is some evidence of, whatever the criminal position is worse than the expensive.
I agree in the sense that it will be a bigger crime, but I think there was something about the smallness
or moral failing, even if it's not a crime.
Yes, I think there's something about the smallness of the expenses scandal, which is part of why it shocked and upset so many people. The idea that people were claiming for things that everyday citizens around the country were struggling to have to pay for themselves, and ultimately that money was being covered by the taxpayer, the very people they were elected to represent. I think something in that balance, in that relationship, and actually the respect for the office, was lost during that scandal.
And there's a whiff of the Partygate scandal in this, which was, again, when people were doing one thing, it felt like the people who set themselves above us were doing a different thing.
Mm.
And they were the regard that the rules didn't apply. And the Mandelson thing is, you know, 2008, financial scandal, financial crisis, the world is toppling, and he's chatting to his mate and making hay with it, is fundamentally despicable. And it does set up this contrast again between them and us, which all of these scandals do. And that's why they're so damaging to politics, because it basically says there's a class of people who think that the rules that we follow, they don't have to.
I think that's why this is, in some people's eyes, not better, but just different, because it involves a group of very, very wealthy people. And most people accept that other world exists, and they don't like it. They don't necessarily think it's a good thing.
But their expectations have been reduced.
Their expectations are reduced, which is not to say that this is not in any way not a huge big deal. And I think it actually, for me, maybe this is because I'm a political reporter at heart, my feeling about it is it's a real moment for Keir Starmer. And I don't mean in the sense that someone's going to come and take over from it. I don't mean talking about May and the elections. I mean morally. The case that he set out to the country is so undermined by what has happened here. I think he has to do something quite significant about it.
Well, he'll be speaking at PMQs today, which you'll hear on Times Radio. I think that's right. You know, Mandelson was close to him. He didn't have to bring Mandelson back into the system. And
he wasn't close to Starmer. That's the irony. He wasn't. They're not big mates.
But he felt he had to do it.
But he brought him back in at the judgment of others around him, and he felt he had to. And that says something about his judgment.
Well, help us judge this this morning. 0333 003 235. If you want to get in touch, Wes Streeting will be with us at 7 o'clock. Close to Mandelson himself, politically. We'll see what he says in reference to this whole matter. We're going to get your daily briefing on politics, business and sport before that, after the headlines with Cara Bentley.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has moved out of Royal Lodge, his mansion in Windsor, following pressure to do so from the King, after more details came out about his dealings with paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Thames Valley Police said it is assessing a claim that a woman was sent by Epstein to Andrew at Royal Lodge in 2010. Meanwhile, the Conservatives will seek to force the government to release all papers relating to how Peter Mandelson got the job as US ambassador. He will be the subject of a criminal investigation under suspicion of misconduct in public office, an offence that carries a maximum sentence of life imprisonment. Alex Thomas was a civil servant during the Brown government of the time.
To see emails from Shruti Vadera, who was a senior political advisor at the time, dealing with the most sensitive questions of government, market-sensitive things. The Prime Minister, albeit under an alias, kind of copied in, just forwarded on to jeffreyevacation@gmail.com. You know, it goes against everything that everybody who takes government seriously should care about.
Peter Mandelson denies wrongdoing. A new government strategy predicts 75% of cancer patients in England will be disease-free or living well after 5 years from 2035. It's 60% at the moment, but the plan promises faster diagnostic tests and cuts to treatment delays. Single people and renters could soon be allowed to foster children in England. Ministers want to open up 10,000 new places by 2029. Don't forget, you can set the Times Radio news briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
I believe those who are curious see the world differently. At Viking, we have always been curious and quite a bit different. For over 25 years, we have been connecting the thinking person with the world. First on the great rivers, then on all five oceans, now on all seven continents. We are One Viking. Exploring the world in comfort.
The Philly cheesesteak is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheesesteak. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Kate McCann and Stig Abel on Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Choose to bank in branch, online, on the phone or through their app.
6:35, this is Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel. Really thoughtful comments from you already this morning. Lynn makes a point, which will lead to a point made by Mike actually as well, but Lynn quotes a very famous line from Lord Acton from the 19th century. Power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Great men are almost always bad men, even when they exercise influence and not authority. Still more when you superadd the tendency of the certainty of corruption by authority. Great men are almost certainly or almost always bad men. She says, sounds all too familiar and I would argue could apply in the modern world to both sexes. Which is kind of this that sort of cynical view that once you get close to power, you're tarnished by it. And Mike makes a point which feeds on from something Kate was saying. The truth is that post-expenses scandal, the Mandelson affair is priced in by much of the British public in relation to how entitlement opens doors, allowing a privileged few into the VIP lounge of life with all the benefits that come with it. The Epstein backstory only goes to add rocket boosters, but it's to a familiar story.
Do you know what I've been thinking about? Something that Michael Gove said to us on the programme yesterday, and it really stuck with me, and I've been thinking about it since. He said one of the jobs of somebody who wants to be senior in politics, a senior politician, and this must apply across all jobs, is to recognise your own failing, your own flaw, work out what that is and mitigate for it. Yeah. And that's the way to be successful, because if you can't see it, you'll be blinded to it and you will fall eventually.
But the true tragic flaw is connected to the ability. That's why it's so difficult for Mandelson, because the thing that's his flaw is also his secret weapon or superpower. His flaw is he loves moving in circles and doing deals and tapping on the shoulder and whispering and making himself the most important but shadowy figure in the room. That's why, as you said, Starmer did not need to bring him back into this. He did not need him to get elected, probably, and he did not need to make him ambassador. And yet he felt he did, or Morgan McSweeney felt he did, or Wes Streeting felt he did, and thus it happened.
Or did he? Because the other argument that's often levelled at Keir Starmer is he's not political enough. You know, he's not astute politically. He doesn't understand this world really that well. He's not a political mover. That's not the type of politician that he is. And that's true. He isn't like that.
But is that an excuse? Anyway, loads of interesting responses, which I, you know, trying to work out where this fits into history and where this fits into your own set of views about how power works. 0333 003 2353. West Streeting is on his way in 20 minutes' time. We're going to speak to the Tories as well. Kevin Hollenrake, Dan Needle, who has been painstakingly going through these emails, will be bringing us new revelations, revelations that haven't yet been reported about Mandelson and Epstein at 8:30. And Giles Corran and Edwina Curry will be with us from 9. Hugo Rifkin from 10. It's PMQ's Unpacked. Big moment for Starmer, because Kemi Badenoch really doesn't have anything to apologise for in this area, so she can go all at Starmer for what he knew, how he vetted Mandelson. That'll be happening live at 12 on Times Radio, and then Andrew Neil will help you guide what to think at 1 when he presents the Times at 1.
Well, let's get a bit more background, shall we, on the politics. It's time for our daily briefing, and we start, as we always do, with Stefan Boscher, the Times Politics Newsletter Editor. Good morning.
Morning.
Stig was talking there about Prime Minister's questions, but there's another big moment in the House of Commons today, and that is the Conservatives forcing something called a humble address. Can you explain what that process is and what we're likely to see in the Commons today?
Yeah, absolutely. So Kemi Badenoch is bringing forward this humble address. And what it is if it passes through the Commons, she wants to force the release of all documents related to the vetting of Peter Mandelson before he was appointed US ambassador by Starmer. Now, so what she's doing is she's, you know, really daring Labour MPs to vote against this motion and saying, you know, do you really want to defend the indefensible and not have these documents released? Now, what Number 10 is trying to do is they've added an amendment to this address to try to make sure that any documents which actually come out are themselves vetted and themselves, you know, subject to strict national security procedures, and nothing that would either, they say, jeopardize national security or jeopardize our foreign policy relationships would come out. So this, you know, is already being seen as a way, as Number 10 very much, you know, protecting themselves, not releasing all the documents. And that will only fuel rumors and fuel speculation that they really do have something to hide here. And the person really in the gun for all this is not just Starmer, who, you know, ultimately will bear on his head, but also Morgan McSweeney, his chief of staff, who undertook the whole vetting process himself and was very close to Peter Mandelson. So it does feel like this is, you know, very swiftly now shifting to a Keir Starmer and Morgan McSweeney story. I think that they're going to be, you know, absolutely under a lot of pressure today.
There is obviously, as you say clearly there, there is clearly political risk. But is there any risk that any of these documents could be damaging in terms of, you know, the way the government went about this process? Are you expecting anything of use to be released, or is this more a symbolic moment?
Well, you know, let's see. I mean, basically what would be released is any, you know, potentially under what Kemi Badenoch is asking for, is any communication, whether it be WhatsApps, emails or any other channels, you know, in writing about the appointment, all information that Peter Mandelson gave, including his, you know, any forms he filled out as part of the process and all his business dealings. And so there would be, you know, I think particularly what would be the most interest are the personal communications between people and whether any of that was in writing that'd be damaging. Now, there may well be that anything that could be potentially, you know, incriminatory in terms of, you know, what they were talking about Mandelson's relation with Epstein and the risk, it may be that that's not in writing, but it would provide another very big moment. And I think really crucially, it would provide another big moment for people organising against Starmer to organise around. It sort of, you know, it sets another date, it keeps the ball rolling. And it very much like Partygate a few years ago, it just continues the momentum and continues the story sucking up a lot of oxygen for the government if it were to go through like this.
Yeah, and of course, Prime Minister's questions will be lively today, and the government is not going to whip Labour MPs, I believe, Stefan, not to vote, well, to vote against this. The government is going to not try and force Labour MPs' hand, is that right?
That's right. I think they're going to try to get them to vote for the amendment, which, you know, I mentioned, which is basically going to strip out all documents that are considered to be risky to national security and considered to be risky for the UK's foreign relationships. But whether that position holds, who knows, because that itself could come under a lot of pressure and a lot of scrutiny if it's seen that this is already an attempt at a Number 10 cover-up.
Yeah. Finally, we have got Wes Streeting on the programme this morning. He's announcing a new cancer strategy. It is a significant investment and a pretty big target. How likely is it that he will be able to meet it?
Yeah, so the target is to have, by 2035, 75% of people with a cancer diagnosis to live for 5 years. And that would be a market increase from currently. Right now, it's around 60% of people. And that is well below, the comparable European rates with other European countries, And, you know, the key sort of, you know, pillar of this, what the government's talking about, is early testing. It's having far more early diagnosis through more screening, more tests, and by catching it early and getting people into treatment earlier, increasing those rates. And, you know, it will be, consider, you know, medical experts saying it would be a very difficult task. There will always be, need more investment, but this is obviously a key area for this health plan that West Streeting is bringing out.
Well, we'll speak to the Health Secretary in around 15 minutes' time about that. Stefan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Big day in Westminster. That is Stefan Bosher there, the Times Politics Newsletter Editor. And if you want a primer on everything that's going to be happening today, including that humble address, Stefan's newsletter will give you that. 9 o'clock in the morning, it will drop into your inbox. Head to your Times account and click on Newsletters.
Now, we're doing a thing tomorrow, which we've started.
We're doing a thing.
We're going to carry on with it. The Times Radio Breakfast Cabinet Q&A, where we get a cabinet minister on to answer questions on their area of responsibility. So we'll still talk to the minister at 7 o'clock about the stories of the day. But this is a chance for you to ask questions about a particular area of government policy. And we're going to start with the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, joining us tomorrow at 9:30. So if you've got questions about planes, trains and automobiles, how the country's transport, potholes, how the system works, nationalising trains, buses,
HS2, bat tunnels,
all of this stuff, how you actually think the country functions or doesn't function, you can actually, we'll be ventriloquists. We will ask your questions to Heidi Alexander tomorrow at 9:30. You can WhatsApp us on 0333 0003 2353, text us 8722, starting with the word Times, or email Emma, studio@times.radio. If you've got a question for Heidi Alexander that you genuinely want the answer to, we will give it to her at 9:30 tomorrow.
Business news coming right up, but first, what are subscribers reading on the Times.com and the Times app this morning?
The third most read.
Jill Biden's ex-husband charged with wife's murder.
Yeah, William Stevenson is accused of the second-degree murder of his second wife, Linda, who died in December. He and Jill Tracy Jacobs, as she was then known, married in 1970 when he was 23 and she was 18. They divorced 5 years later. Jill married Joe Biden in 1977 when he was a senator.
In second place.
Russian woman linked with Andrew described amazing night.
This is about a 26-year-old Russian woman who Jeffrey Epstein set up on a dinner date with Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. She later wrote to the paedophile financier saying she'd had an amazing night and a special adventure. Between 2009 and 2012, the woman was in regular correspondence with Epstein and appeared to introduce him to a number of other women. I really recommend you read that article because there's some quite shocking exchanges in it which have come from the Epstein files.
And the Russian nationality is, yes, not uninteresting, as we heard from Christopher Steele yesterday, who told us that he thought Epstein had been recruited by the KGB in the early 70s. The article you're reading most this morning.
Humiliated Andrew moves out of Royal Lodge.
Yeah, and although Mandelson is the political story, it seems your attention is still on Andrew. A source confirmed that he'd relocated from the Windsor mansion to an undisclosed address on the King's Sandringham estate in Norfolk. The Sun reports a friend of Andrew's saying leaving was so humiliating for him that he chose to do it under the cover of darkness. So there we go. At 7:46, this is Times Radio.
6:46.
Did I say 7:46? Yeah. No, that would have panicked
people. You
wished
an hour away.
I don't wish it away, and do not panic. If you get up at 6:47, it is merely 6:46.
Business Bulletin on Times Radio with Sky Business Mobile. Only Sky Business Mobile rolls over unused data and automatically shares it with your team. See skybusiness.com for T's and C's and verification.
Let's get the business news now with Times Business Editor Richard Fletcher. Morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Goddamn AI. Of course we're going to talk about it. It's the future. It drives an awful lot of the stock prices in America. But the Claude Cowork chatbot has wiped billions off the market value of London's largest media and data companies. Why has it done that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story, this. So basically, we saw this launch yesterday of this new chatbot, as you say, by Claude. And what it's done, it's really made the market question the value of some of our biggest companies, not just here in London, but also in New York. So RELX, which is actually the 16th largest company in the FTSE 100, quite boring, so not many people know about it. They lost over $6 billion from its stock market value. The London Stock Exchange Group, which actually is a data company, the stock exchange is just a very small business on the side, they lost $4 billion. And then other companies such as Experian Sage also seeing a big sell-off.
Why though, Richard? Why? And, what's the reason?
Well, so this is Anthropic said that basically its Claude Cowork chatbot could automate legal work such as contract reviewing, compliance workloads. It could do templates, and this is the core business of many of these companies. You know, they make hundreds of millions of pounds from selling services like LexisNexis in RELX's case to legal firms and other companies. And the idea that you've got this chatbot that can basically automate that and do it itself is really damaging to those business models. What I find really interesting is that actually just a year ago, a lot of these companies were being touted as the AI winners. So the idea was that RELX and the London Stock Exchange had access to all this data that AI was going to need. And actually their shares rose in that sort of AI bubble because people said they were going to be the winner. Just one last point. You won't be surprised to know that the US did this even better than us. So they wiped $300 billion off the value of their software and data stock. So, you know, really big moves in the market. And I think it's really interesting to see how, you know, companies that, you know, just a few months ago, analysts were telling us were going to be the winners, they now fear could be the losers.
And is this the first signs of thing we talked a lot about, I think a lot about, which is the sort of the white-collar purge that could then follow from all of this? Because this is, again, and look, there's question marks about the security of these apps, and they probably won't happen, you know, in a widespread way in the next few months. But at some point, these jobs that you're talking about that software helped was also done by real people, and they won't be in work anymore.
Yeah, of course. And that is, you know, that is the predictions at the moment, because they could change, are that it'll be white collar jobs that will be hardest hit. I mean, a lot of those jobs have already been off-source. So it could be white collar jobs in India and South Africa and those sort of places that we sent a lot of this automated work to. But yeah, absolutely. This is going to hit jobs.
No one's going to feel sorry for senior partners in law firms anytime soon, I wouldn't imagine, Richard, because they're old enough that they won't be affected by AI, and some of them earn a considerable coin.
Yeah, so we've documents filed as part of a takeover for Taylor Wessing, one of the big law firms, reveal that there is a lawyer, we don't know exactly which one, although there is some speculation, who earns a weekly salary of £200,000 a week. And we've had a bit of fun this morning in the business pages comparing that to some Premier League football players. So it looks like this lawyer owns more than Saka at Arsenal and Sancho at Man United, who's currently on loan to Aston Villa. So yeah, there's some speculation that it may be their head of their international technology and head, or it could be their one of their venture capital lawyers. So lots of speculation about who it might be, but yeah, certainly a lot of money.
£200,000 a week, dearie me. Richard, great to speak to you. We'll speak to you in half an hour's time.
Thanks a lot.
He's the Times business editor. And you can get, as well as getting Stefan's newsletter, if you're into business, as you should be, you can get Richard's newsletter as well. Go to your inbox every day. It goes into your inbox every day. Just go and subscribe to it if you'd like to.
Business Bulletin on Times Radio with Sky Business Mobile. Save your business time and money with data roll and share. See skybusiness.com for terms and conditions.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will join us after 7, around 10 minutes' time. And coming up next, an update on the sport for you, and we'll remember this day in history. This is Times Radio Breakfast with Stig Abel and Kate McCann in association with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
How I Made It on Times Radio with Sky Business Mobile. Join Ed Vasey and Associate Business Editor of the Sunday Times, Hannah Privett, every Friday morning as they capture the human stories behind the entrepreneurs who have built their businesses from startup to startling success. How I Made It, every Friday morning with Ed Vasey on Times Radio with Sky Business Mobile. Only Sky Business Mobile rolls over unused data and automatically shares it with your team. See skybusiness.com for T's and C's and verification.
Get a first look at tomorrow morning's front pages. Tonight from 10 with Carol Walker on Times Radio.
What is it that makes a Fred Olsen cruise feel like no other? Perhaps it's the awe-inspiring destinations that will stay with you forever. Or our ships that are small in size but big in character. It could be the wonderful people you meet along the way. Or our extraordinary crew. Maybe it's all of these things together. But if you really want to know what a Fred Olsen cruise feels like, there's only one way to find out.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
On DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app and on your smart speaker. Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel on Times Radio.
Good morning. It is 6:53, time for some sports, and Arsenal are through to the final of the Carabao Cup. Charlotte Richardson can tell us about that and the rest of the sport. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate.
Lots of very happy Arsenal players around this morning, and a pretty important win for them too.
A really significant win, and I'll spare you any summary of the 96 minutes prior, but Kai Havertz scoring in the 97th minute at the Emirates, securing their first final under Mikel Arteta. Remarkably, since 2020, it feels like Arsenal are building momentum. They're in the Carabao Cup final. It's a season that could go on to be really quite historic. And the Arsenal players have got smiles on their face. And I think there is a sense of relief because although the rain was pouring, it wasn't a great spectacle. Chelsea did push them all the way, but 4-2 on aggregate, they managed to progress over the two legs of the semi-final.
And it's been ages since they actually won anything. So this year, they really do have to finally get over the line, don't they?
Yeah, well, four failed semi-finals, and it's given Arsenal this tag of being the nearly men. And that in sport can erode away at confidence and belief. Mm. So for Arsenal on this mission under Mikel Arteta, he's spoken as much about the sort of psychological side of his squad as he has the tactical and the technical. So to be able to overcome that late charge from Chelsea and to make it through to a final will be a real confidence boost. And they're still in the FA Cup. They're flying in the Champions League. They're top of the Premier League, despite everyone dismissing or grading their style of play. No one else is better than them in the Premier League. So, like I say, it could even be a quadruple. There may be even more for Arsenal supporters and perhaps more importantly, their players as well to smile about over the next few months.
Okay, maybe I need to suspend my feelings about Arsenal being a boring football club. Elsewhere, cricket, it's a bit up and down. We're up again, apparently. Now being talked up as world beaters after another excellent win in Sri Lanka after a pretty miserable summer. What's going on?
Well, let us never be too hyperbolic in sport, hey? Never too high, never too low. And yes, England did win the series against Sri Lanka. They managed to defend their lead and 129 runs. It was more actually a case of their spinners shining. I think arguably you look at some of the batting and that was a bit questionable. The opener, Ben Duckett, dismissed for LBW on a golden duck. Jacob Beffle, Tom Banton, Harry Brook all registering runs in single digits. So I still think there's room for improvement. I think there always will be. But some positive momentum building up towards the World Cup, and that starts this weekend, remarkably. I can't believe how quickly the year's going already. So they have Nepal up first on Sunday, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. Can I ask you finally, this story's really interested me. An American downhill skier, Lindsay Vonn, she's going for gold at the Olympics, but she's got no ACL in her knee and she was airlifted to hospital after an accident. She still thinks she can win gold.
Next time I moan about any aches and pains, I am going to try and be more Lindsay Vonn. This is remarkable. So the American downhill skier has ruptured her left ACL, her anterior cruciate ligament. And despite being airlifted and having this accident on Friday, she is determined to compete. And I have to read with you quickly a quote from her. I knew what my chances were before the crash. I know my chances aren't the same as it stands now, but I know that there is still a chance. And wow, what an incredible, incredible mindset.
She, I love that.
She is quite remarkable. So yeah, we'll keep an eye and see if she manages to get gold.
Well, fingers crossed for her. And
for
that
mentality alone, I think she deserves it, doesn't she?
Yeah, she definitely does. I love that quote. That's brilliant. Charlotte, thanks. Great to have you with us.
My pleasure, Kate.
That is Charlotte Richardson there with the sport.
6:57, time for our radio version of The Times On This Day feature. On this day, the 4th of February in 1913, the civil rights activist Rosa Parks was born. She began life as a seamstress but became a leading civil rights activist when she famously refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a segregated bus in Montgomery, Alabama.
On this day in 2004, Mark Zuckerberg launched Facebook from his Harvard dormitory room. Here's 20-year-old Zuckerberg talking to CNBC about what was then a small startup.
When we first launched, we were hoping for, you know, maybe 400, 500 people. Harvard didn't have a Facebook, so that's the gap that we were trying to fill. And now we're at 100,000 people, so who knows where we're going next. We're hoping to have many more universities by the fall, hopefully over 100 or 200. And from there, we're going to launch a bunch of site applications, which should keep people coming back to the site and maybe could make something cool.
He launched it by hacking into Harvard servers to download photos of students, which he then uploaded to the website to create profiles for what is now the world's most popular social media platform. The first face on the site, did you guess what it was?
I didn't.
Was a blue pixelated image of Al Pacino.
Do we have time for a little bit of Fleetwood Mac?
Always.
Everyone is nodding at me. Let's hear this. Yes, on this day in 1977, Fleetwood Mac released their best-known album, Rumours. That was Dreams, which was written by Fleetwood Mac's lead vocalist, Stevie Nicks, and reached number one. We had a Fleetwood Mac instrumental last week.
We did last week.
So this programme is sponsored by Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, it's not a bad place to be.